How does one chronicle a friendship? How does one remember the twists and turns, accidental meetings, serendipitous events, shared interests and habits of the heart? How does a relationship progress from "Dear Mr. Flint, Dear Ms. Lee," to "Dear Wayne, Dear Nell," to "Beloved Professor, Dear Madam Famous Author," to "Dear Ones, Dear Prime Suspect"? How does mutual respect morph into formal acquaintance, warm friendship, and finally love? These letters record the progress of my relationship with Nell Harper Lee, but they can only hint at the reasons we became such special friends and correspondents. From the first letter between us in 1992, when she was 66 and I was 52, to the last, about a year before she died in 2016. Perhaps in another life, Nell wanted to be a historian of the South, as I have been throughout my career as a writer and professor. Or perhaps, as Nell sometimes hinted humorously, she fell under the spell of my wife, Darty, whose name confused Nell for years as she tried to master my pronunciation, who brought her exotic chocolate concoctions and told her so many funny stories, and I was merely the appendage who came with the deal. Perhaps we became close because Darty and I were there for her at three critical junctures of her life. When her sister, Louise, slipped into dementia, when she herself suffered a stroke, and, obsessed with maintaining her privacy, isolated herself at a rehabilitation facility. And when she was forced to give up her second home in New York City and live out the rest of her days in Monroeville, the town from which she had fled to freedom 65 years earlier. Or perhaps we three met in the twilight of our lives and just needed each other. Although Nell and I communicated for more than 20 years, we never worked together, lived in the same town, or talked for hours on the telephone. Our friendship hinged on certain encounters, most of them face to face, and in between was lots of time and space, and letters. Her first to me was typewritten and formal. I didn't keep a copy of my response, but I remember that I replied in kind. She didn't write me again for a decade, not until a family crisis prompted her to reach out. From that point on, we both dropped our awkward formality in favor of ink-on-paper intimacy. Nell preferred fine stationery. Email was never an option. Her letters were like those of two other Southern literary icons of the time, Flannery O'Connor and Eudora Welty. Sally Fitzgerald, editor of O'Connor's correspondence, notes that the Georgia master of the short story had a reputation for reclusiveness by inclination. But O'Connor, like Nell, was also a witty and gregarious storyteller and conversationalist who often penned wonderful letters. Though she lived into the age of personal computers, Facebook and Twitter, Nell rejected them vociferously and profanely, believing them merely alternative ways of invading people's privacy. Conversely, she once sent us a Charles Rennie Mackintosh card from her precious and dwindling stock purchased at the Hunterian Art Gallery at the University of Glasgow just because she wanted us to have one. Her letters are self-consciously of another age, less flirtatious, gossipy, and trivial than Jane Austen's, her literary idol, and more like O'Connor's and Welty's. Colloquial, chatty, funny, satirical, brutally honest, unflinching, emotionally warm, intensely personal. Because her circle of close friends was small, her correspondence was doubly treasured. In time, others will no doubt share their hoard of letters to, from, and about Harper Lee, and an editor will compile them, as R.W. Chapman did for Jane Austen, and Sally Fitzgerald did for Flannery O'Connor. This collection is, by comparison, small and far from comprehensive, but I hope it offers some interesting moments and important feelings in the life of my friend and whets the reader's appetite for more.